Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
This is Zander and Hanley on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
All right, here we go. It's ESPN 1000, Zander and Hanley, Sunday morning. Look out, Brian. All three teams won yesterday on the same day.
Yeah, it's a nice little day in Chicago. Hey, we're going old school today. I'm on the telephone pole.
You're up on the telephone. Did you have to crank it?
Green Acres was one of my favorite shows, so I climbed up the pole to make the call. But here I am. Our technology sometimes a lot like Soldier Field sod. But we try to overcome. NFL said this will work today too. So there you go.
Okay, well, thankfully the NFL weighed in on this situation here. Cool. And I hope that, do you have those spikes on your shoes so you can stay up on the pole, or are you just hanging on for dear life?
Sarah, get me Mark Zander down there in Chicago.
Right. Oh, you know, I love Sarah. Isn't she the best?
Yeah. There was Andy Griffith, right? Hey, Sarah?
Sarah. Yeah, right. So yesterday, watching the Bears, you know, it's one of those things, Brian. I want to be excited, but I know better because it's just preseason. But we saw some things to be excited about. We're going to talk to Courtney Cronin coming up at 10:30, our ESPN 1000 Bears insider, to just kind of get a little bit of reality, right? Because when we're just watching on TV, and boy, that grass was beat. I mean, there's no way. I mean, even on TV, you can tell. So I can't imagine how bad it was in person.
Yeah, I mean, look, I took Tyro Santos' word for it yesterday when I tweeted out, what was coming up on our show, because he said it was awful. Tuesday. Now, he said it was a little bit better, which, you know, again, didn't pass the eye test, but apparently passed the NFL test. But everyone else from the NFLPA to agents, you know, if I was Andy Reid, I would have maybe given it a long second thought about putting Patrick Mahomes out there. But you know what? Here's the thing about Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't care. And he makes it look easy, and he made it look really easy. You know, the encouraging thing, Mark, was the Bears defense was really having a good, consistent showing through the first week or two of camp, right? Mm-hmm. And the problem is maybe it was because they were going against the Bears offense, which was in the missing points formation in honor of Matt Nagy in the first half yesterday. They saluted their former coach by not scoring because that's what they did under Nagy. But Patrick Mahomes, 11 plays, 72 yards, 5 minutes, 37 seconds off the clock, and just, you know, dissected them, made it look easy, didn't get dirty, looked like, you know, this was just a kid out there wheeling the ball around the yard and, you know, calling it a day. I mean, only had to convert 2 third down conversions. That's what it looks like when you're an elite team, even in the preseason. And obviously the Bears, by their own admission, are far, far, far from being an elite team. But there were some things to like. But it's awful tough to judge anything right now, given how many people weren't available, and some of the people who were available weren't all that. But some guys who were just guys 2 weeks ago, all of a sudden you start paying attention to them. You think, maybe got something there in Tajae Sharpe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, those were the things that we could pick out, right? I mean, even, again, it's a preseason, but seeing Semien in, it's like, you know, and he's not half bad as a backup. This is interesting. We didn't know, you know, we didn't know what we were going to see, and, you know, how much it matters in preseason. That's always the thing. But the field was pretty rough, and we've got some audio of Patrick Mahomes and Coach Reid talking about the field conditions. Let's hear that here.
Now, a lot better than my high school field was.
Interesting.
Not much. Yeah.
What do you think of the field conditions?
Yeah, I mean, it was it was good. I mean, they're a little. I think they had some type of controversy. So there was some stuff here and there, but I mean, it wasn't any crazy bad shape or anything like that. So I love playing here at Soldier Field. I mean, it's an awesome stadium. You feel the history of it, hopefully, I get to play a couple more games here and try to do whatever I can to win them.
Yeah, you know, Brian, there is there's a documentary on Netflix about Woodstock 99 and what a mess that was. Thank God it was an Elton John concert. You know, those Elton John fans aren't too crazy, because the field would have been much worse heading into that game. And And now Rammstein is going to be there. Fred Huebner, big fan of Rammstein, which is still hard to fathom.
I'm unaware of Rammstein.
They're a German hard techno rock band. It's really wild that Fred is into them. I can't imagine him being in the crowd for Rammstein. But the point is, they are going to have that Rammstein concert. Then they're going to redo the whole field, thankfully, because obviously it needs it. But yes, as you were saying, we were trusting with the Bears, Santos and anybody else who's commenting on the field. But sometimes TV makes things look a little better. That looked really, it was burnt. It was as if, and this is a bigger question. We don't really need to go down this path, but I did openly wonder yesterday thinking, all right, so the Park District is trying to make a case to keep the Bears at Soldier Field. They're not doing a good job by letting the grass go like this.
Well, the Chicago Fire actually postponed a August 23rd game in anticipation that the field's not going to be up to their standards. They're going back out to Toyota. Is it still Toyota out there?
Yeah, in Bridgeview, whatever it's called today.
Yeah. They anticipated that it's not going to be playable for them. And yet here the Bears are. First of all, I've never seen a mosh pit at an Elton John concert. So you're right. That crowd doesn't really
get it. They were easy on the grass, and it was still bad. Can you imagine otherwise?
Yeah, Danny's song gets everyone jumping up and down. No.
That makes people crazy.
Yeah.
And Tiny Dancer. Oh, my God.
Oh, don't get me. She was a seamstress for the band. One thing about Patrick Mahomes, two things. The voice doesn't match the body. That's just a stupid takeaway on my part.
But you're not wrong.
Okay. But, that guy's a pro's pro. And Randy Walker, the old head coach at Northwestern, and he's not the only football coach that ever say it. A real football player would go play football in an asphalt parking lot if he had the opportunity, right? There's no place they wouldn't want to play football.
You play where you got to play and you make it happen.
And he's like, it wasn't that bad, I'm like, he knew who he was talking to. He's like, I want to play here. I'd love to play more games here because of the history. I mean, he gets it. He gets it. And I think Justin Fields gets it. But one of our Twitter poll questions today, Mark, is about Justin Fields because really that's the first one, two, three things on the list that matters. How did he do? How's he going to do?
Certainly.
And one of our Twitter poll questions today is, where is your confidence level in Justin Fields today as compared to the day he was drafted with Chicago Bears? Are you more confident? Are you as confident? Are you less confident? Or time to start looking at drafting a quarterback in 2023?
Those are for people sitting on the ledge already, and I suppose there are some.
Well, I wouldn't put Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus. They're going to look at this thing with critical eyes from now until the end of the regular season. I don't see a postseason envisioned for these Chicago Bears. They're going to have to make a decision in very short order as to what they have here, because they didn't draft him and they inherited him. And I don't think it's a 2-year process. I think they'll have a very good grasp after year one as to what he grasps in terms of system and leadership and all the intangibles. And I'm still very confident in Justin Fields, but I don't think they wait through 2023. I think they will. I'm not saying he wouldn't be here in 2023, but they might go ahead and draft another quarterback and get that pipeline going a little bit.
Well, it would be interesting to say or see, how much he has to do to gain their confidence to move on to 2023. And like you said, it wouldn't be a, hit the eject button, send him off, and then all of a sudden start over. It would be a transition. But, to earn that job yesterday, it wasn't enough.
Well, look, he had 18 snaps.
And he didn't get a lot of time either. That's always the thing with preseason.
Well, that's the problem. Now, as much as Braxton Jones was being celebrated as being, a standout in training camp to this point, going against Robert Quinn. Well, Robert Quinn wasn't out there yesterday, but Braxton Jones was okay, pretty good, not great. The right side of the offensive line, oof. But you know, Justin Fields, 18 snaps, and he had a few good throws, and Tajae Sharpe made him look really good on that.
Yeah,
extended
that one-handed grab was stellar.
The fingertips, right? And brings them both feet down. But he still got no points in the first half. He had three and outs, right? He had three first downs and three punts. I mean, it's not – you saw plays, you saw flashes, but you didn't see sustainability. And that's what you got to start seeing. You got to see let's pick up the first down. Let's pick up another first down. Let's get in the end zone. There's a novel approach. You know, it's not asking too much in even the first preseason game to put some points on the board in the first half. Now they come back and win the game. Okay, congratulations. And some unsung and undrafted guys like Jack Sanborn, you know, put a lot out there for their coaches to consume on tape and really, you know, might be eye-openers. But it's all about Justin Fields. And
yes, it is.
You know, a couple of those receptions were about the receivers, not necessarily about the throws. But he was on the run. And we talked about yesterday, how much is the run by design and how much is it because he's got
run for your life type run.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
And thankfully, with the preseason being multiple games, this is where we have to see improvement for next week. And
well, Thursday comes. I mean,
well, Thursday. Well, yeah,
Seattle,
Thursday.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And
they don't have a whole lot of time to turn this thing around. Not again. There were things you liked. I mean, Shaquan Brisker was outstanding, right?
Wow. Yeah, that was nice to see. And he was a draft pick that was part of the compensation for Khalil Mack. So if we see what we saw yesterday consistently, that would be a loud win for Ryan Poles, it seems.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, because when you're trying to evaluate Justin Fields moving forward, you know, they threw numbers at the wide receiver position, and you've got many guys out with injury and Pringle and guys like that. And it's still, even with them healthy, Ross Tucker, who does CBS work and some other work as an NFL analyst, he told Brad Biggs yet again yesterday, and he has been consistent in this. He said the Bears may have the worst wide receiving core and the worst offensive line in the entire league. See, now that would be a problem if only one of those things was true.
Not both. Both, yeah, it's worse. Yeah.
Then it's really going to be interesting to see how they, you know, look, I think Ryan Poles is still going to be adding guys, in particular to the offensive line mix as he sorts things out and figures out who's your keeper and who's not. But you're not going to get appreciably better between now and the start of the regular season because it'll be guys who are cut from other teams.
Right. What was your first impression 5 minutes into the game? If you just said this, if you just compared to what the Bears look like in preseason under Nagy and what they look like under Eberflus, did you notice a difference? I feel like I did. Maybe it's already because I know that it's a different situation and my mind was playing tricks on me, but it looked more cohesive.
Yeah, much more organized.
Yeah.
Not just the 5 minutes, but by the time the game was all over with, no pre-snap penalties. You know, things that we saw coming out of timeouts last year.
And some takeaways. And that is that's an Eberflus thing, right? That's part of the game plan, a strong defense. Takeaways.
I did see guys not tackling, just guys hitting with their shoulder when they could have wrapped a guy up and made a play, and there's another 20 yards after the fact. Some of that stuff still has to be cleaned up. But, yeah, to your point, much more organized. I think there's much more accountability every time these players talk about how, you know, certainly camp has been much more difficult and harder on them in terms of physical and all that, but also what's expected. And they all just seem to say there's a new sheriff in town, and you know, this one seems to have a little bit more of expectations and a little more accountability in the locker room.
And when you said that they did miss a few tackles, I saw that too. You know that they're going to hear about that. Last year, you did not know if they were going to hear about that. You did not know if there was accountability. I made the assumption that there wasn't much because the same things kept happening over and over. This year, there is. It seems to be that's the case. And I look forward to seeing less of those mistakes because they are going to say point them out and say, you know, you can't repeat those mistakes or you're going to get some bench.
Well, yeah, exactly right. I mean, to last year, guys would do it, and there was no lack of playing time, no sit down. And you saw a muff punt yesterday, and that guy was sitting on the bench the rest of the game. There's one thing Matt Eberflus will not abide is mistakes that put the ball on the ground. And then, you know, so he recovers the muff punt, and then he's 14 yards past back where he got the punt because he's trying to escape after, you know, he's in trouble. So that ain't going to fly with this coaching staff. You know, you don't get a second chance. You know, you'll be sitting down thinking about that one.
And that's the point. That's what a coach does, and that's not what we saw. We did not see enough accountability. The team was running things. Now the coaching staff seems to be running things. 312-332-3776. We've got more audio to hear. We'll play for you. We'll take your phone calls. Courtney Cronin coming up at 10:30. Our Bears Insider here on ESPN 1000. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Xander and Hanley on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
Brian Hanley, it was a Bears win yesterday, but what does it really mean being preseason game number one? One of our polls on ESPN 1000 on Twitter, at ESPN 1000, how confident are you in Justin Fields compared to his draft day? More confident, as confident, less confident, and draft a quarterback in 2023. Well, we'll see. We'll take your temperature on that if you want to chime in. 312-332-3776. We've got Matt Eberflus on Justin Fields' performance in game one.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought he operated good. I thought he was, you know, I know he had a couple of drops there. They dropped a couple of balls there, you know, but we'll get that cleaned up. You know, we got to take those layups when he's checking the ball down and get those yards, but we'll get that cleaned up. That's not an issue. But overall, it was good. His operation was good. In and out of the huddle was good. We had a challenge on the sideline where I think he hurried up, you know, to get to the line so the guy, the opponent couldn't throw the challenge flag, which was good. We got the playoff and did a nice job operating there. But overall, it was a good performance.
I still am so glad we don't get word salad. That was pretty right to the point.
And Matt Eberflus is correct to point out that Andy Reid wasn't going to throw a challenge flag in the preseason. I didn't think he was, but they were acting as if in a regular season game they had a hurry because the question was whether Tajay Sharpe got both feet down the sideline after the fingertip catch, which was terrific. But they hurried up, as you would have to do in a regular season game or even a playoff game, if we can imagine, to, you know, before they have a chance to look at the play a second time and decide whether to challenge it or not. So there were, like, that's to your point, it looks like a more efficient, coherent operation in a snapshot of a game. Yeah.
Right. Professional operation. And we know, I believe we talked about it or we read about it or I heard it yesterday, but you know, Matt Eberflus did a lot of work. Yeah. I must've read this somewhere where, you know, he was working with a mental skills coach.
No, we talked about yesterday.
That's what it was. He was running through scenarios, right? In the season, he was running through all these possible scenarios. And that was just impressive as hell, because it's not like we heard that Matt Nagy did that, but that's the type of preparation you need in the NFL. No doubt. And it's good to hear that that's the level that they're at.
Going through 15 to 20 video sessions with their staff. Colleen Kane wrote about this in the Tribune.
That's
trying as a first year head coach, trying to make sure that he knows what situations he's thought them through. He's actually looked at them on screen and how would I react to this? And then, you know, checking in with the NFL rules people to make sure he understands all the rules and he knows when to challenge, when not to challenge. You know, Lovie Smith just used to go on a gut feeling. I mean, he would say that publicly. It was just, well, that's nice, but you'd like to actually have something more of a basis to react to, right? Okay, I know that rule. And here, I want to ask Bears fans not only what you liked and what you had concerns about yesterday, 312-332-3776. We talked about the sod and how embarrassing that is. And, you know, as much as Patrick Mahomes was a pro and said no big deal, the rest of the league had things to say about it, and rightfully so. Is there anything that as a Bears fan who goes out to Soldier Field, if you're a season ticket holder, is there anything you really love about that stadium? I mean, parking in and out.
Beyond the vintage part of it,
right.
I think we should throw that out there because that's obvious. What do you really like about that place?
Yeah, I mean, it could be concessions. It could be sight lines. It could be – I'd love to know, if you were trying to sell the Bears on staying, what would your bullet points be? What would be your PowerPoint presentation? Is there something that you think is really, like, among the best aspects of an NFL stadium, and we have it here at Soldier Field, and normally we just beat up Soldier Field with the flying saucer inside the colonnades and the war memorial. But maybe there's something, you just absolutely love. I'm sure there are a lot of people who just love the people around them, and they've been sitting around each other for decades, and they're going to miss that. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'm missing something, because for, I don't know how many, six, seven straight years, I went to every Bears home and away game as part of the Sun-Times staff covering those games. And I would get there three and a half hours before a game. We talked to Mark Potash yesterday, and he was outside the stadium a couple hours before kickoff. But I would make sure I didn't get caught in the traffic, right? I'd rather be there earlier than not. And people, whether even if you're taking public transportation, you have to trek across the museum campus to get to Soldier Field,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe the concessions, we know how much we salute and celebrate the food down at the Rate. I have never really heard anyone say, boy, that Soldier Field hot dog is that's a to die for. I got to have that.
Right. And I will say this. I have never seen a situation to where a new stadium, and I'm just going to get this out here. Yes, it's a pain in the ass to get to Soldier Field in many different ways. But I've never seen a situation where a new stadium goes up and it's easy to get into a game that everybody wants to go to. There's always going to be some kind of traffic challenge. Unless they can do it, and they can change my mind if they move to Arlington Heights and make this happen, I do not have high hopes for eliminating any kind of traffic issues. However, the experience of being in the stadium, the concessions, the bathrooms, the seating, the sight lines, all of that plays into that. And yes, it is a historic building. And that's the one thing it has going for it. Otherwise, is it really keeping up? Is there anything that stands out? And I look forward to talking to Courtney Cronin. We're going to do that at 10:30 here. Because Roquan Smith standing on the sidelines, could we not have made him play, Brian?
No, you couldn't. I mean, yes, technically, of course, you can't force him. I mean, going to drag him out on the field. But they haven't even fined him yet after taking him off the physically unable to perform list. So that got his attention, or should that? Or the next step is, are you going to either start joining us on the practice field, or do we have to start fining you the $40,000 every missed practice and then your game salaries?
I guess I didn't want to see him on the sideline if he wasn't wanting to be part of this team. I just didn't even want to see him there as a fan.
Well, this we talked about yesterday. This thing has taken a turn, and it's gone south in about the last 3 days in a big way. And by the way, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, reported that someone on behalf of Roquan Smith has been dialing up teams trying to engineer a trade. And the problem with that is no one – affiliated with Roquan Smith is in a authorized agent in the NFL or the NFLPA.
Right. So, and he can't, because he can't even go ahead and start making calls on his own behalf, can he? Because that's tampering.
The Bears have to get permission to do that, and they have not done that. And Brad Biggs verified the Mike Florio report. So now he checked around, and his sources say, yep, that is happening.
Wow.
And so the Bears haven't played hardball yet. But to answer your question, one, they don't want him out there going to get hurt since he hasn't been participating in practice. But two, they're still trying to salvage a deal here. And our other Twitter poll question is, what's the more likely scenario? Bears sign Roquan Smith through an extension, Bears trade Roquan Smith. And there's some talk yesterday, I actually heard some talk, this thing could be resolved one way or the other by Thursday before the game in Seattle, which I will be shocked if that happens. But if it does happen, is that more likely that means they're just done with it and they're going to get what they can get for him? I mean, Ryan Poles faced this thing head on and went public and had his media, his press conference to talk about it and address it. But we've heard Ian Rappaport talk about the Bears backloading the deal, maybe not having enough guaranteed money. Still wanting to see more from the 25-year-old who's not, you know, whether he fits in their system. And really, what's the value of that position? Historically in the league, it's not one you throw a ton of money at, even though $100 million is nothing to sniff at, right? So this situation, it bears watching, and it really, I don't know that it gets settled in the next 3 or 4 days, but it can't go into the first week of the regular season. It just can't.
I say we, as we go into break here and come back and talk to Courtney Cronin, maybe we should start a crowdsourcing to hire him an agent, because apparently he's a little short of the funds.
I was going to say, we don't need a GoFundMe page for the Bears to pay him, right?
I hope not. 313-332-3776. That's how you get a hold of us. But we are going to talk to Courtney Cronin, our Bears insider, next year on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
This is Xander and Hanley on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
We are joined by Courtney Cronin, Bears insider here for ESPN 1000. Game one for the preseason in the books, a victory, but what does it all really mean? Good morning, Courtney.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, good. So aside from the terrible field conditions that was really, really obvious on the TV, what did you see that was really, really obvious that maybe we should be happy about? I mean, you know, Justin Fields did okay. I'm not sure we saw a lot of progress, but maybe there was something subtle in which we should point out here. What was your take?
Yeah, I think that the fact that the first team offense and Fields were out there for 18 plays, it's such a small sample size. You really can't go all in and take a ton away from it. The fact that they didn't produce any points on those drives, I think they had a total of 2 or 3 first downs. Not great, but you look at the connection that he has with Mooney, it's still there. That's like a great thing because, you know, it's nice to have somebody he can rely on to catch the ball. And then on top of that, you know, I think the catch that he made to Tajae Sharpe, there's a lot that you can look at within that. It's not just Tajae reaching out with his one, you know, I think it was the left hand that he caught it with, like a really nice catch, tiptoed catch down the sideline to keep his feet in bounds. Like, that's great. But that also came on 3rd and 9. In Fields, there was a free rusher at the end who got to him. And so as he's making that throw, he's getting hit. So I think hanging in there against the blitz and timing it up enough where, like, I asked him about that play afterwards, and he said, like, he knew exactly what he's expecting. There's a lot of man coverage in the preseason because that's what teams do with their defenses. They want to evaluate how their guys can play straight up. So when you know that and you know that that's the situation you're going to be put in with the receiver, and you and the receiver can communicate that to each other pre-snap to know, okay, the timing, the rhythm, and where you expect the ball to be and where you expect Sharp to be, like, that was all perfect. I thought that was a really nice delivered play. So it's more than just, oh, great catch by Tajae Sharpe. It's looking a little bit further into that about how has Fields grown from year 1 to 2. Could he have made that throw last year, or would he have just been out of the pocket running, trying to find somebody on the run within 2 seconds of the ball being snapped because he was, you know, sensing pressure and maybe not knowing he could hang in through that pressure. So I thought it was really good from those moments. But obviously there were drops. There were the offensive lines kind of all over the place still. You know, I do think some of the takeaways for that group, Braxton Jones is your left tackle, pretty obviously for week 1. You don't pull him after 18 plays if he's not. And I thought the left side of the line, him and Whitehair, did really well. You know, Braxton Jones didn't look like he was too overwhelmed out there. I mean, he had Frank Clark lined up against him, and I think he honestly handled his own really well, which I don't know even if I would have expected, definitely did not expect from a 5th-round rookie when this whole thing was starting to come together. But that's a welcome sign. I think the other part of the line, there's definitely some work to be done on the right side, and we didn't see Riley Reiff, so that has to factor into your evaluation. But those are my takeaways really for the offense that we're going to be talking about in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. We can evaluate all of the second, third string guys all we want. How much is that going to matter? in the end, I think is what that boils down to.
Right.
Courtney, you have a unique perspective coming from covering the Vikings, because Jim Miller, who did the game yesterday, has talked about, you know, using one running back and two wide receivers. And where Kansas City is more of a 70-30 pass run ratio, the Bears' ideal is going to be more like the Rams, the Vikings, or even the Packers to a degree. But having covered that team and watching how that offense evolves and when it is running successfully, what it all entails, love to hear your take on what went well and what needs to go well for that Vikings-type offense to work here, and also the importance of the quarterback's coach here who came from the Vikings, because that relationship with Justin Fields, certainly, you know, you can bring some perspective to that.
Yeah, no, I think that honestly you're going to see a lot of 21, 22 personnel, like, you know, using two running backs on the field at a time. Like, if you want to get success out of your second-year quarterback and you have talent deficiencies around him and a depleted receiving group, you need to rely on the run game. That is like point number one that needs to be emphasized over and over and over again, because that's only going to help Fields in a year where he's got to figure out some ways to improve without the burden of winning games. But that's, you know, when we talk about year two for Justin Fields and the expectations, that's a storyline in his development that's going to be a storyline all season long. So some of that's on how does this scheme help him in those circumstances where it might not look, you know, it looks kind of bleak. And so I think from a play calling perspective and what, you know, what we expect is Luke Getsy was on the field. I asked him about that yesterday, if that was by design. And I guess it's just, maybe that's where Luke prefers to call plays. So we'll see how that connection works, because being able to modify and tweak that and making sure it is what the quarterback wants it to be and it works well for him, that's what you use the preseason for, to test out. Does Luke Getsy need to be in the box to see plays? Does he want to be on the field? Like, is he communicating with Justin, like, pretty intently on the iPad after, you know, after the offense is off the field? All that stuff is going to play into the success of the quarterback. But in terms of using, like, heavier personnel grouping, like, you're right. I think you should expect to see some 12 out there, which is two tight ends. Like, if you don't have the you can't, not everybody can be an 11 personnel team. That's just right. Is what it is. You can also run out of 11 personnel. I know that people look at the Rams and say, well, they never do that. Well, actually, like, yes, you can run out of a three receiver set. It is possible, but I think that there are ways to kind of modify this where you are using multiple tight ends, multiple running backs at a time to help your quarterback and not necessarily go like what I guess the average fan would think of as like a traditional passing attack where you have all these wide receivers out there.
How important is Andy to Justin Fields' development?
How important is who?
Andy Janico.
Oh, Andrew Janico. I mean, that's huge. It's your quarterback's coach. And Janoco's great. Like, I've known him for years now. I've seen him coach everything from tight ends to wide receivers to quarterbacks. And I think having somebody who can, like, you've got a quarterback in year two. There's no more pressure on, like, there's not a job that has more pressure on it than being a coach, of making sure that you can get the franchise some answers, not all of them, but some answers about the quarterback by the end of the second year. So yeah, Janoco's going to be playing a huge role on that. And I think, you know, he's been in Minnesota. He was there my entire time. And he did a terrific job there. And I feel like there's a reason, like, him and Luke Getsy, their connection going all the way back to Pitt. Those things are important. And I think that, you know, for Justin, having somebody he's comfortable with, because Luke is obviously in his headset, but Janoco's up in the booth so he can see the entire field. And being able to relay that to him after drive, like, what did you see? What did I miss? Even Fields said, like, today and tomorrow, when they go through the film and they look back at everything, like, he's going to go through every single play and be like, all right, what were the rules on this play? Where was I supposed to go with it? Where did I go with it? And trying to evaluate from there, there's a lot of minutia in that, but that stuff matters. It adds up to figuring out, was the play successful? Was it not? And the quarterback's coach is a huge part of that.
Now, obviously, the offense is going to be something that we really, really focus on, but Bears have always been known for defense. Jaquan Brisker, wow, did he look good yesterday. That was part of the Khalil Mack deal. So that looks good. We haven't seen Robert Quinn play. Hopefully, he's got his head on straight this year and he plays. But Roquan Smith, how is that? Do you anticipate anything happening before Thursday? Because reports are it could get settled one way or another before this Thursday?
Yeah, it's a tricky situation. I have an FAQ coming out at ESPN.com kind of breaking down the whole thing. And it's, I just, you know, in terms of like some of the reports you've heard of trades and how willing the team is to do it, you heard Ryan Poles yesterday before the game on the team's radio network, just talking about that nothing's changed really on that front, that, you know, he's still trying to get something done for Roquan Smith. And I don't know, you don't want to overreact to the preseason, but that first drive, Matt Adams got picked on by Patrick Mahomes. Like, would I say that Roquan Smith wouldn't be in the same situation? I don't know, but having somebody out there of Roquan's caliber mm-hmm. only helps the defense. You're not a better defense when your best player's not playing. Like, that's a fact. And so I think that's like when we talk about leverage, who has leverage, who does not, that's Roquan's leverage of see what it looks like when I'm not out there. Like, give me what I'm asking for. But the Bears also could be looking at this thing from a realistic perspective. I don't feel like when he requested a trade that he really wanted to be out of here. To me, that's a negotiating tactic for someone who does not have an NFLPA certified agent. He might have somebody in his ear, a financial advisor, wealth management person. A lot of these guys who represent themselves do. But I don't think he actually wanted to be out of here. I think he wants to reset the market, which right now is $98.5 million for Darius Leonard, and he probably wants more than that. So I wouldn't be, you know, with anything with this situation, it's so bizarre because you don't know how serious the Bears are about wanting to trade him. If they've been wanting to get this thing done, then of course they don't want to trade him. But if there is a market, if there's a market out there for him, like, you got to think of a team like the Saints. And I'm just throwing this out there, like, their linebacker situation, Kiko Alonso just retired. They had another linebacker, I think, get hurt. Like, teams need linebackers. The market for them is just not what it used to be, especially for off-ball linebackers. I mean, I saw it up close in Minnesota. Anthony Barr's contract looks like an absolute failure on the part of the Minnesota Vikings because he got hurt after he got paid in 19 and never panned out. And so I think teams are right to be cautious about it, but if Matt Eberflus is telling you that this is a necessary position for my defense, I need to have this guy out there, then maybe they end up going back to the drawing board and trying to get something done and the kind of massaging those negotiations so it's not as contentious.
Do you think there's going to come a point here sooner than later where the Bears start playing hardball and fining Roquan for missed practices and games?
I feel like they're going to have to at some point, but I mean, it's also, they could also let it fly for now, which is, I mean, if he's technically going against team rules because, as Matt Eberflus told us the other day, healthy players on this team are supposed to practice. You can't set a precedent and then have another couple guys, maybe people who want a new contract too, and be like, well, if Roquan did it, I'm going to do it. Like, you create chaos that way, and this is an unnecessary distraction for this team. But in the end, if they say, no, we're not going to fine him, let's just let him play this thing out, he better play week one because he doesn't want his contract to toll. That's worse than anything else. It's a nuclear option that literally it would be self-sabotage because if your contract tolls, they keep you at $9.7 million next year. That's your number this year. And you effectively shoot yourself in the foot doing that. There's no logical reason to do it. You would end up playing maybe like, you know, you just somehow like get yourself through 17 games and then you hit free agency. Of course, could they franchise you? Yes, but like, I don't think that if the relationship is deteriorated so poorly by that point, the Bears wouldn't just do that out of spite. That's idiotic. That's a reckless use of power to do that. So I feel like both sides would end up parting ways. But if this thing doesn't get solved and he doesn't have a contract, he's playing week one because the financial penalty and what that does to your career to not play and to miss games far outweighs any sort of like, let me stick it to them, I'm proving my point and digging my heels in. Like, no, you're going to have to play at that point.
Well, it's going to be an interesting week getting ready for the Seattle Seahawks on Thursday night, 7 p.m. kick. Courtney Cronin of ESPN, thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to that article at ESPN.com.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Okay. Thanks for joining us here on ESPN 1000. We'll be right back.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
There are millions of places to get ESPN Chicago. There are smart speakers, phones, podcasts, standing in front of the old National Bank Studio on State Street.
Hello?
There's Twitch.tv, FM HD, and of course, the original ESPN 1000 on the AM dial. We're glad you found us. And so are these very patient hosts, Mark Zander and Brian Hanley.
We just talked to Courtney Cronin, our ESPN 1000 Bears insider, and she does a great job. It was good to talk to her. She pointed out some things about Justin Fields making that throw to Sharp, who, yeah, that was a 3rd and 9 situation, and nice play under pressure. The O-line, we got serious issues there, the Roquan Smith thing. There's a lot of drama leading up to preseason game number 2 this Thursday, Brian.
Well, Mark, yesterday one of our listeners tweeted at us that you are like an onion, young man. There's so many layers to it, Mark Zander, because we found out that you're a car guy and you're going to a car show and you got a Grand Prix from 1969 and you can put cars together and take them apart. So you are an onion, but they're like the onion that Roquan Smith's situation presents. There are so many layers, and Courtney just said it. We've been talking about it. Okay, he was on the PUP list because the Bears wanted to soft sell this thing. He's missing practice. He's injured. He can't practice anyway, so we'll figure out the contract. Then on Tuesday, he puts out the written statement saying he wants a trade. He's been disrespected. And by the way, the McCaskies could step in and give me everything I wanted, which is not going to happen. And so the next day, Ryan Poles takes him off the PUP list and says, guess what? Yeah, you're ready to practice. You're physically ready to go, and yet he still hasn't been out there. So how many layers are there to this Roquan Smith situation? And Courtney alluded to it. It's about building a culture, and we talked about accountability. And how long can you let this slide where there is no consequence to his action? Inaction. He's not practicing. He's not
right, and she and what she said was basically they can't let this go on because this gives permission for other people to do this. Right. It's setting precedent. And this would be something I feel the previous regime would let go. And I'm looking for Eberflus and Poles to kind of set a direct, a directive, I guess I would say, to say, okay, we're this is our offer. You sign. We take you off or you're getting fined every day. And now this is going to start getting for all the practices. And if you do not play, this is going to really affect your career. Another year of control, all of these factors that are not going to work in Roquan Smith's favor.
Okay. And we, yesterday, Mark Potash told us and Courtney just reiterated, he has to play 6 games this year or the Bears control him for another year at the, he doesn't get to go to free agency. This is the 5th year of his contract because he was a first-round pick. So back to those layers, as long as you think there's a possibility to sign him, you don't bring down the hammer and start fining him. But that said, in his statement, his written trade demand, he said that he felt like they were negotiating take-it-or-leave-it offers. Now, Ryan Poles said there are some historic clauses of this contract, which would set precedent around the league for a guy, a linebacker like that, getting paid. But the fact of the matter is, new regime wants to put in their way of doing things and let everyone know who's in charge. You can't let this thing drag on, even to the first week of the season. But that said, if you're Ryan Poles, you don't want to be making those trade phone calls that you make and not someone for Roquan Smith is making. Illegitimately, as a GM, you don't want to be basically feeling like the rest of the league is trying to take advantage of a situation.
That's
thinking
right.
You're behind a rock and a hard place. You're in between that because the guy doesn't want to play for you. So therefore, I'll give you 70 cents on the dollar. 312-332-3776. How much are you monitoring Roquan Smith's situation? Because the Bears aren't expected to win 6-7 games this year. Does it matter to you? He is your best player on the team, on our defense, certainly, and I would argue on the team because we're still waiting to see what we have here in Justin Fields.
Mm-hmm.
But if doesn't matter because the team is years away from, hopefully being a Super Bowl contending team, does it matter at all to you that, or is this, it can't be a distraction. In my world, it is a distraction already. It's taken
a
turn in the last 3 days. Right. And I don't know that I could let it go on another 2 weeks. I don't know that it'll be done by Thursday, one way or the other. But
and that's why I think we're hearing Thursday, because it has come to a head. It can't go on very much longer because, again, as you said, rightfully said, you can't start finding the guy if you really think you're going to sign him because that creates, and again, not having an agent, this is a direct contact between Poles and him. So there, that's a layer that's not there. And so if you start finding him, that's going to create a problem, but you certainly can't let it go on because it creates a precedent of which you don't want to create for the rest of the team when contract issues come up. And yesterday we talked about this, Brian. We haven't seen him in this defense, in this team, under these new coaches and this new regime. And they have every reason to expect that they can get a feel for what he's going to be in this new situation before they sign him. And of course, that's not going to happen. They're going to have to take a leap of faith. The man's talented. There's no question about it. But at one point, as you said, we're years from really being, you know, this tremendous team, and hopefully we're moving toward that. Does a Roquan matter right now for him to hold us hostage like this and hold the team hostage, basically? Where do you weigh in on this? 312-332-3776. There's a lot of layers, as you said, to peel back here, and it's just really unfortunate that this drama is part of such a bigger storyline.
Also, what do you like about Soldier Field? I mean, is there anything, you know, yesterday the embarrassment that was the turf yet again, and this has been going on for 30 years. So, I mean, it's not 5, 10. It goes back to the 90s. And yet here you are again, and the Bears have one foot out the door and one foot in Arlington Heights. But it's just an embarrassment no matter they're on the move. But as a Bears fan, is there anything you're going to miss about Soldier Field that you really enjoy? 312-332-3776.
Yeah, we'll get to your phone calls. More Bears talk in 2 minutes here on ESPN 1000.